This is the Mormon Expression Podcast. Find us on the web at mormonexpression.com.
Hello and welcome to another edition of
Mormon Stories
and Mormon Expression.
Hey, John, how you doing?
Brought to you by?
Do we have sponsors?
With your special host.
You know, one John is never enough. You always need two.
Hello, John Larson.
Hello, John DeLynn. How you doing?
Thanks for joining us today on this special edition of Mormon Expression and Mormon Stories podcast.
Yeah, yeah. This isn't the first time we've posted something on both sides, so we've been down this path before.
In fact, somebody posted a cranky message to your Facebook page saying, we've heard enough of him in previous episodes.
Which him? Were they talking about me or you?
They were talking about me on your podcast.
Oh, okay.
this is your first time appearance as a legitimate guest on Mormon Stories.
Oh, really? Wow.
I know.
And we, you know, the people will be listening to this for the next couple of years. We should make it clear we're doing this live.
Yes, this is the first time that I know of that a live streamed Mormon themed internet based radio show has been made available with listeners tuned in both through audio and through text. Is that scary?
I feel overwhelmed.
It looks like we've got at least 30 or 40 people, maybe 50, tuned into the text chat. How about that?
Yeah, but four of them are sock puppets, so I can throw the hard questions at you without having my name.
No, that's good. That's good. I bet there's some Danites, don't you think? Some modern-day internet Danites?
You know, there's always rumors, but, you know, I've been disappointed. I've been watching. You know, I've wanted something exciting like that. Nothing ever happens.
I always figured if there were Danites, Paul Toscano and Grant Palmer would not still be with us.
Yeah, you know, there's canaries in the land, there's canaries in the mine, and I don't think I'm it. So I keep my eye on some other folks first.
Yeah, who's number one?
You think they're going to firebomb signature books before they ever go after me.
They're the number one threat, huh?
I don't know. But there's people who are up higher on the list.
Well, John, I have one. I'm going to start off with the first question.
Okay.
Why in the heck would you want to interview me?
Well, you know, that's a good, you're always fun to talk to, but the Genesis, we started talking about this a couple weeks ago. There were two things that kind of happened. One, Niall, who, you know, appears on my podcast, sort of called you out in one of our episodes. We were doing a feedback episode and he sort of threw down.
He kicked my cyber ass.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, and that got me thinking, you know, well, we can talk about this a little bit. And the other was, there was kind of a kerfuffle, on a Mormon Stories, podcast a few weeks ago involving Richard Packham. And I don't necessarily want to go into the details of that, but I know there's a lot of things that go on behind, you know, both of the podcasts, and there's a lot of decisions that we have to make and editorial, whatever. And we don't always get a chance to, you know, to let the world know what that is. And you know, there's issues where we bump into each other from time to time that I thought it'd be fun to talk about.
Well, let's get going.
So why all the kerfuffles? No, here's my first question for you. I hardly ever get any negative email. You know, I don't get any, like, hate mail. But you just get inundated with it. And you're the nice guy, right?
Okay, wait. First of all, if we're talking about email, I've actually received less than probably 10 nasty negative emails in the 5 years I've been doing this. So now that's with the exception of this interview that I did with ABC on World News Tonight a week or two ago. I got about five or six more after that. But all in all, I've gotten very little hate email, to be honest.
Well, that's still a lot more than I've gotten, but you still seem to cause more, I don't know, people get their panties in a wad more about you than they do about me. Why is that?
True. For sure.
You know, because we're both still members, right?
Yep. I am.
Me too.
Yeah.
What? Yeah, yeah. Why are you such a lightning rod, John?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I guess if you stand in the middle of the road, you're likely to get hit from both sides, from both directions. I mean, trying to straddle the middle road makes people just not be able to figure it out. That's probably, I don't know, a lot of people say, I just can't figure you out. That's got to be one thing. The second is I've changed my position a lot. I think I really waffled, and I think that makes people think, you know, that sometimes my credibility is besmirched and that I'm not stable. That's probably frustrating to some. I think that some people struggle. I don't want to say they struggle with nuance, but I've tried to take a bit more of a nuanced position, and sometimes tempers get so heated on either side that when people are really heated, they're not into nuance. So I know that from the TBM, maybe even apologetic point of view, you're either in or out, you're either with us or against us. So I can see why the apologists and TBMs would definitely hate me and see me as a wolf in sheep's clothing. And I think that the people on the disaffected side can easily see me as an apologist, or the biggest attack on me is that I lack credibility or I'm dishonest because I'm trying to walk this middle road, which for many would mean that I would have to be deceptive to my leaders. And while I've tried to be honest with my leaders and with my family and everyone, I've come to a point where I definitely see that there is some dishonesty in trying to walk the middle way.
Dishonesty?
Yeah.
Maybe you can explain that a little bit.
Well, I guess I was trying to figure out the right time to talk about this, but I've actually, starting with the Sunstone Symposium in August of 2010, I've started telling people that I no longer sort of feel like I'm a public advocate for the Stay LDS position, even though I started the website. I haven't really talked about this on the podcast yet, or really written about it, but I'll start with what I still feel okay about the Stay LDS position. I still feel like there are people who need to navigate a middle way to keep the peace in the family, or because they really enjoy the church, or they're in some unique circumstance where they can't believe, but they have to, figure out how to make it work. And for people like that, I think that I still feel good about the Stay LDS position being available as one item on the menu, as one tool in the toolbox. But as I've sort of gone on the road and tried to sell the Stay LDS position now for a year or two, it's been really amazing to me to see how many people started out trying to live the Stay LDS way, but in the end were not able to carry through with it, mostly for reasons of integrity. They basically say, at the end of the day, I felt like I was lying. I felt like I was being deceptive. And I'm not of the opinion that everyone who lives the middle way is being deceptive, but I'm saying that most of the people, probably the majority of the people that I've interacted with, have found that position to be untenable in the medium to long term. Maybe it works in the short to medium term. Maybe it works under a certain unique set of circumstances, but in the medium to long term, it just feels dishonest and lacks integrity. I've come to liken the Stay LDS position to sort of this notion of telling a gay person to marry a straight person and it'll all work out in the end. It sounds good and you want to do it and you don't want to lose your family and friends and community, and you can pray and really work hard at being nuanced and sophisticated to try and make it work. But at the end of the day, a gay guy is likely going to want to be with a gay guy, and it kind of falls apart. And so I guess I would never want to lead. Let's just say I'm playing the psychologist role. I would never want to lead with recommending that a gay person marry a straight person. That would be something I would say only do in a very unique and maybe extreme set of circumstances with much caution. And I guess I've come to feel the same way about the Stay LDS position now, even though I love Brian Johnston and the guys who run that site, and it's going to stay up, but it just, it's going to have a big disclaimer now at the beginning about how I feel about it. But I guess here I go changing again, and I'm just going to add to the people hating me. So thanks, John.
Well, you know, that's interesting because for me, I think there's a lot of people who should stay in the church. I can think of, you know, many, many people that I know and love who would not do well outside the church for various reasons. But, you know, you were talking about integrity. And for me, you know, I tried that whole, I'm going to stick around in the church and be a New Order Mormon. And I'm just going to, and I tried about every flavor that I could try on. And at the end of the day, I just couldn't pull it off. Some people can. And it's probably because I didn't dig on church that much at that time. You know, I think some people at the end, they're really conflicted because they love going to church, but they don't believe it anymore. But to me, I was, you know, it was just a pain for me to go. I didn't like it. But there was a lot of that integrity thing you're talking about. So I can really understand that.
Yeah.
So John, you said your position's changed. Were you just coming out of the closet to us? Or are you, where are you with the church now?
I'm struggling a little bit, frankly. I, you know, I'm still, my family's all still going and active, and I'm still semi-active. I'll miss occasionally. And, yeah. And I haven't had a new talk with my leaders yet, but I'm having a hard time, to be honest.
Do your leaders, pay attention to you? Do they listen to the podcast?
I don't think so. There may be one or two people in my whole ward who listen, and then I don't think it's more than one or two.
You know, I find it fascinating that all this stuff that's going on, and you know, the podcast. You know, we're a small thing, but Sunstone and Dialogue and all that, the blogosphere. How much that's just out of the radar of most Mormons. Meaning, most Mormons just have no idea any of that's going on. And, right. You know, I even trying to explain to a Mormon what it is we're doing, they just don't understand at all. They don't look at their faith that way. I was getting my hair cut, you know, I'm back here in Utah, and I was getting my hair cut a couple of days ago, and the guy brought up religion with us, and Zilpha was sitting there with me, and, you know, he started trying to convert us, and he just couldn't understand even as Zilpha tried to bring up some concern. So I think that most of what's going on here is way outside the realm, which is probably why, you know, you're not likely to get church discipline for this sort of behavior.
Yeah, I think they know that I'm doing something on the internet, you know, especially after I'm on ABC News and stuff.
Yeah.
And they did a local full featured article on me in the Herald Journal in Logan a couple of years ago. But I tried a couple times to talk to my bishop, and I've said this on my podcast. And both bishops that I offered to have the conversation with politely declined. You know, I'm like, hey, if you want to get into the stuff that I'm struggling with, they just, I don't think they want to have that conversation.
I've given them the same warning. When people have asked me, I always say, I'm happy. I like talking about religion. I'm happy to talk about these things. I love talking about Mormonism. Are you sure that you want to have this conversation? And most everybody will bow out at that point.
Right. Yeah. Yep. And the other thing is, I don't, you know, well, I guess I'll say two more things about that. Why I don't think I've been punished so far. The first is that I don't think the church is really in the excommunication or disfellowshipment business. If you think about it, yeah, the September 6th got busted. You could argue that that was just trying to make an example out of people and make a large statement. But you have to really do some pretty explicit things to get X these days. You have to like openly deny the church's truth claims or openly criticize the brethren in really mean-spirited ways. And I think I've avoided both of those things. I don't think, you know, even if the probability that the church's truth claims are minuscule, you know, I think that one of the beauties of religion is, or one of the ways that religion continues to survive, is you can't prove it wrong. So I think it'd be silly to just denounce the church's truth claims, and to be honest, I haven't gotten into the business of really criticizing the brethren. So, but then thirdly, I think that it would be bad PR for the church to start excommunicating people leading up to the Romney campaign, and especially after they put out this new PR campaign where they're trying to tout Mormons that are different and unique and individuals. So I think we may have a little bit of shielding from that. What do you think?
Yeah, I think the church has given up. I mean, every time they've they've excommunicated somebody well known for heresy, it's backfired on them. I mean, even back to George P. Lee, when he was excommunicated for conduct unbecoming a Latter-day Saint, you know, that hit all the papers, and it just doesn't. The September 6th blew up on him. Still get bad reverb from that. Southerton was excommunicated for living with a girl, wasn't it? So they really don't excommunicate much. The last person I can think of, the last big name, was Grant for his book.
Inside of View. And he was just his fellowship.
He was never excommunicated. And even that hit the paper. So
actually, there's Lyndon Lamborn, but he was pretty strident. As I understand it, someone else asked about Chad Hardy on the board. Hey, Gazalem, shout out to Gazalem, whoever that is. He asked about Chad Hardy. I guess we don't totally know why Chad Hardy was excommunicated. We only know that he got in trouble for the calendars, but
I don't think Hardy was excommunicated for apostasy. But you know, local church leaders. I hear about a case every once in a while where they'll excommunicate somebody for apostasy. Because most excommunications do take place on a local level. I'm just talking about big name people. So they'll still go after little fish for apostasy, but not somebody who's going to hit the newspapers. So you're safe, John.
Oh, okay. Good to know. Hopefully that's true after today.
So you know, your faith has bounced around, and that's been fun to watch for the last couple of years. So what does that mean for the sort of space or position of Mormon Stories?
You mean what's going to happen to the podcast?
Yeah. What's your direction?
We're going to merge. We're going to have a merger. We're going to have a Mormon Stories, Mormon Expression merger.
Some couples are better off apart. There's more, you know, sexual energy that way if they don't get married.
I think you probably know I brought on Natasha Parker, a marriage and family therapist.
Uh-huh.
Who's fantastic, the Mormon therapist. She's going to start doing some episodes. I brought on Dan Witherspoon to help out. And, I invite any of my listeners who want to do it, what I tried to do a long time ago and what you guys have been doing really successfully, which is to just, if people want to produce their own interviews, they just need to get a hold of me. And I want to keep it going. But my number of interviews is, my frequency of interviews is going to have to decrease just because my PhD is starting to really ramp up now. But I still want to keep in the business. So hopefully I can get more interviews like the Andrew Ainsworth one with Damon Smith, which was a fantastic interview that I had. All I had to do was set that up. I didn't have to do any work except to produce the stuff. So we'll keep going strong.
That's good. Dan Witherspoon and I had lunch at Sunstone. You weren't there, so we've got some things that we're cooking around you.
Yeah. And I'm totally open to collaborative efforts between us as well.
Now,
between our podcasts.
What would you say to this? You're the safer podcast.
Safer?
Safer.
Safer from whose perspective?
From Mormons. They're going to look at your podcast as safer than...
Do you mean as active believing LDS church members?
Yeah, the listeners and guests are going to look at your podcast as a safer place to be than Mormon Expression.
For true believers.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's probably true. Which is actually safer is a totally different question.
See, you're the wolf in sheep's clothing. I'm the sheep in wolf's clothing.
You're a sheep, huh?
Absolutely. If everybody else is going over that cliff, I'm sure as hell going to wonder why.
No, I don't know. It'd be interesting to see if we did a poll for those who have left the church, which podcast has been a factor in more people leaving.
Yeah, you know, I get more letters actually from people who talk about the podcast helping them just sort of live their lives, not necessarily leaving or not leaving. I think that's probably, if there's LDS people out there who think the podcast lead people out of the church, it's probably a rarity. But I think it does help people not feel so alone. You know, you can read the boards, and there's a lot of great information, great people on the boards, but it's sort of cold when you hear the voices of other people. You know, you have a friend out there.
Right.
So, you know, but like I've said before, it's probably a lie. I've said I don't care if people leave the church or not. I obviously don't believe the church is what it purports to be. And I don't believe in anything supernatural. So, I mean, that sort of dismisses most of it for me there. But I would consider myself a Mormon. I just a non-believing Mormon. And I wish I was welcome at church, but I don't think I am.
Yeah, that's the big difficult thing. Hey, let's do this. Let's ask our listeners who are on the chat board to tell us in the chat which or both of our podcasts led to their disaffection, if they are disaffected. And let's see what they answer. And then we'll update the listeners as we get a tally. How's that?
Where the podcast itself led people to the brink of apostasy?
Yeah. Or was a significant contributor.
Now,
so far I'm winning, unfortunately.
Well, I mean, I think you probably have about six times as many listeners as we do. So you should be able to get six times as many apostates.
And I've been going for 5 years.
Yeah, yeah.
So what do you see as the difference between our podcasts? I'm curious, do you even contemplate my guess is you don't even consider us in anything you do. But I'm curious if you do, and if you see a vision difference, or if you see us as complementary or what?
I see us as complementary. I don't, the only thing we sometimes compete for are guests. Because the world we dwell in is sort of small, and I'm sure you feel the same way, if you get a guest that we were about to get, then we'll hold off on getting them back on. It's not like they're forever out of play, but you know, like if you interview Richard Packham, I don't want to interview him next week.
Have I ever interviewed someone you were about to interview?
Yeah, once. Once I can think of. It was,
Oh, it's okay. If you think about it,
but you know, sometimes you'll do one, and I think, that's somebody I was going to call, but I never called them, so it doesn't matter. I'm sure you feel the same way. There's a lot more people you'd like to talk to at any point.
Man, when you did Mr. Deity, my heart, because I had been in contact with Mr. Deity for a couple of years, but shut down the podcast right before I ended up trying to interview him. When you interviewed him, that was such an excellent podcast. My heart sank. There have been three or four times where you've done some things that almost made me want to quit my podcast altogether because they were so good. It made me feel like I should just fold up because John Larson is amazing.
See, now that's one of the chief differences. You're a silver-tongued devil.
No, I swear. I swear on, you know, the middle way.
You asked, part of the question was, what do I think the difference between the two is? I think we tend to approach things with a little bit more humor.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's intentional or not. You do a little bit more serious interviews. And I say that we just posted a fairly serious one this morning. So
it was awesome. I loved it. But I listened to it today.
Yeah, it was a good one. But I think we can approach it with a little bit more. A little bit more tongue in cheek, a little bit more. And more than that, a little bit more caustic. But I think the hopefully the humor helps that stuff go down. I hope people, you know, get stuff to think about. But yeah.
No, I love that. You know, I'll add something. I think that the personalities that you brought on and the camaraderie between them is a draw for people, just regardless of the substance of the content. People like to hear what Niall's saying and the interplay between, you know, some of the guests and the whole mic thing. Just the characters. It's almost like reality TV. There's forget the substance, just the personalities make it entertaining and interesting.
Yeah, I think for people who listen to it a lot, but for people who listen occasionally, I think that can be sort of this, you know, you get some of those podcasts where we had five guys on. It was a big sausage fest, and you can't keep one voice from the other. And, it gets caught in a blender.
Right.
I try to steer it away from some of that. That might be our strength, but I don't know. You know,
no, it's been, yeah. Well, I think it's great. I think you guys are awesome. I love your stuff. I wish you listen to my podcast like I listen to yours. What do I have to do to make you listen, John Larson?
I listen to the first hour of all your podcasts.
That was a backhanded. You're missing some good stuff, bro.
I just don't have the attention span that you do.
I produced, I don't know. Some of that stuff's good, man. Damon Smith, Carolyn Pearson. I stand behind that.
I listened to Damon. I really like that one. I intend to listen to Carolyn, but of course we were just moving this last week, so I haven't had a chance to listen to it. Zilpha listened to it, and she said it was great. So at least somebody in my household has listened to it.
Okay, I feel a little bit better. Zilpha, we love you.
No, John, I really like your stuff, I think it's all good. I think I'm like we said, you know, we did a podcast at the end of last year. And, you know, there's room out there for a lot of different voices and a lot of different people. And like you were just saying a few minutes ago, you know, I would be happy to help other people get their own stuff on. I get people contact me just like I'm sure you do who would love to be on the podcast. And you know, we'd love to have them if we had an infinite amount of time. So the answer is just record your own damn thing. As long as it doesn't suck too bad, we'll post it.
Absolutely. Well, that's interesting.
All right, so
what else you got for me?
Are we ready for questions from the unwashed masses out there?
Are you ready? Are your questions done?
Well, I think I've gotten through the main part. I'm sure we can come up with some more as we move along.
Christian Anderson, welcome to Mormon Expressions / Mormon Stories.
Nice to be here.
Hey, Christian. Yeah.
So here's my question for both of you. Who is the one person that you have not been able to interview that if you could, you would get on the podcast, on your podcast?
That's easy for me.
It's easy for me.
Why don't you go first, John?
Maybe it's the same guy. Michael Quinn.
Absolutely. And I've actually had personal conversations with him. He won't do it. I met him for the first time at a Sunstone symposium in Arizona. Hung out with him in a hotel room. It was so cool to spend 3 or 4 hours with Michael Quinn. But I hit him up then, and he said, "I've said everything I want to say. I've done interviews at Sunstone with people, and I'm just not interested in coming on." Part of me feels like he's more comfortable with the written word than he is the spontaneous spoken word, because he tends to be a very meticulous kind of character. John, what's been your experience?
Yeah, I haven't got as close to him as you have, but same sort of thing that he's just not real interested in doing it. So
you've approached him.
I've approached him through some of his contacts. He's you got to know how to contact him, and I don't know where his hidey hole is.
Oh, I can help you with that.
Well, yeah, maybe, but I don't think he'll come on my podcast either. So,
yeah. All right, Christian, anything else for us?
Yeah, well, so on a related note, assuming a GA would come on, assuming that...
Oh, yeah, that's another one for sure.
Is there one GA that you would love to have on? Let's just assume for a second that they would say yes.
Oh, yeah, we probably have the same one here, too.
You're going to say Boyd K. Packer, right?
No.
Who are you going to say?
Marlon Jensen.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, who are you going to say?
You know, Holland, Jensen, Packer, Monson. Probably Monson would be number one for sure.
I think Monson and Packer are too old. I don't think they've got enough mental capacity.
Come on, man. Monson is the get. Don't kid me. Monson is the get, right?
I've heard enough rumors about Monson over the years. You're not going to get him without handlers. I don't think he'd be that great of an interview. There's a reason they're not rolling him out like they did Hinckley.
Yeah, no, I've heard he's not feeling very well these days either.
Yeah, and you know, we've heard all the widow stories, so there's not much more there. How many widows were in his ward, by the way? I think I started counting one time and I quit at 3,742.
Oh, don't be mean, John.
So Packer, what would you ask Packer?
I would ask him all the same questions I'd ask Monson. It'd just be fun. I'd ask him if he ever regretted It'd be hard to interview any of these guys, really, because really, what would any of them say publicly? They wouldn't say anything. It would be like meet the press. It'd be like a politician. I'm not saying they're politicians, but I'm saying that there are all sorts of things that I'm guessing these gentlemen would be willing to say privately that there's no way in H that they would ever say publicly.
Oh, absolutely.
So what you'd get, I guess, would be very carefully crafted statements that really didn't say a whole lot.
Yeah, you know, rather than talk to any of the 12 because of that reason, I'd rather talk to people like Turley, you know, some of the people who are more removed from the inner circle. I just don't think they'd be an interesting interview. Now, there are the, what is the church's podcast called? Conversations or something like that?
Yep.
Where they have a faithful person interview them. That's an interesting podcast. People should get a hold of that.
You've been listening to it?
Yeah, I love that one.
Any good interviews?
I really like the Dallin Oaks one. I recommend that one to everybody. Because he actually, I think he's interviewed by Sherry Dew in that one. He's got his wife Kristen with him. And he kind of goes off script a little bit. You can see the man come through a little bit more, which is, you know, what's missing from conference.
Yeah, so, that's cool. I'll check that out. I can't freaking believe you listen to that and you don't listen to my stuff.
I told you, I listened to the first hour.
You're killing me. All right, Christian, thanks for calling in.
Thanks a lot.
All right. Okay, well, let's open up the calls to another caller. Sarza, we meet.
Yes.
How are you?
Good.
Thanks for calling in.
Oh, thanks.
I've got John Larson with me here.
Hey.
Yeah, I know.
John Sierza. Sierza.
I'll be talking with John next week.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's right. We are at the 8 o'clock.
You know that when Leno and Letterman were in their heyday, if you did an interview with one, the other wouldn't let you come on. So, Sierza, you just know that you're besmirching your ability to come on my show once you're
I know. It's sad.
I'm just kidding.
So I think you guys need more female voices. Well, John DeLynn, you do pretty good, but Mormon Expressions, you guys need more guys. I mean, girls.
No kidding.
We keep getting turned down. I've
been telling you guys that since the beginning.
Well, we've got Zilpha comes on and Bridget. And
Zilpha should never not be on.
I agree. I think Zilpha's great.
Zilpha does what Zilpha wants. Zilpha comes on when Zilpha wants to come on. It is completely a function of Zilpha.
Zilpha, step it up, sister.
she's sitting here listening next to me. But yeah, she runs her own show when she wants to. No, Zilpha's great. Yeah, more females. Yeah, I agree.
That's actually my only complaint about any of your stuff. I think it's great.
So here's my question for you, and I think we brought this up on one of the podcasts. But so I opened up the essay contest. We had 11 essays submitted. One of them was from a woman. 10 of them were from men. Why is that? So I'm saying it's not my fault.
Well, you know, for the essay competition, I came into your podcast I missed it, or I would have entered.
Oh, so now the female count is up. It was before you came along. All right.
That's right. I'll bring them in. I'll bring in the Relief Society.
You know, and I'll have to say that I think some of the women, and I don't know if you can comment on this, John, struggle a little bit more. Not that what they do, they say really great things, but I get more second thoughts from them after they record. I don't know why they second guess themselves a little bit more. So maybe that's it. Maybe there's a little bit of a fear, it's probably cultural. I don't know.
I suspect that's true, that it's cultural, or just even a female thing. You know, you feel lots of guilt.
Yeah, that's probably true. No, more women.
More women. We do need more women.
Yes.
Mormon Expression wants more women.
I actually once sent an email out to every Mormon feminist I knew saying, I want to sponsor a feminist Mormon podcast. And I offered to produce it and teach them and do everything. And I don't think one person, maybe two people responded to the email. And they were like, maybe, but I'm really busy. So I've tried. Wow. I'll keep doing it. I brought on a couple people. I'm releasing a podcast in a little bit by where the interview's done by a fabulous woman. So let's keep working on that, John.
Yeah.
Excellent.
I also think that women tend to be busier. You know, guys have more time to sit around and talk at their computer screens.
That's because the women are doing all the work. Yeah,
because Zilpha just said because women are doing all the work. That's probably
true. That's right. Oh, now I'm really embarrassed. Now the feminists are going to hate me. Well, Tiersa, thanks so much for calling.
Well, thank you guys.
All right. Let's talk again soon.
Sure.
Okay, John, do you want to read something from our grab bag?
Sure. Let's see. Here's one to Dear John and John. My father says that the bigger the church gets, the more it is likely to experience epic downfalls, more and more like the Catholic Church regarding worldly scrutiny. Do you agree the larger the church gets, the harder it will be to manage it in a positive global light? That's from C-Boy.
Well, why don't you go first on that one?
I think it's true to some extent. It's also true that the larger the church gets, the more smaller things won't impact it. You know, like a bishop diddling a kid. I mean, that becomes pretty common. I think the biggest impact is the church is so obsessed with its image. It's like the network television. You know, network television has to appeal to get the most people watching their shows. They water them down as much as they possibly can. So the church's biggest problem is not that it's going to topple and fall from some weird doctrine. It's just going to water itself down so much to appeal to the greatest number of people that it'll just become meaningless.
Yeah. I'll add that I think financially, the more we expand in the third world and the more we shrink in the Western world, the tougher it is to be profitable.
Yeah, that's true.
Except, I hear they're doing some innovative things in third world countries to try and not have them be a drain on the church's financial resources.
Well, I mean, that's been obvious where, you know, there's been people who brought up where there's kids going to primary right now who aren't food secure, who don't have clean water. And there's other places in the world where the church spends money on these treks, you know. So it's a huge problem because the church gets most of its money from, you know, the Wasatch Front and then from the United States. And I know in my lifetime, I've seen the amount of money that the church spends on things that would be like more social, you know, like road shows and bazaars and campouts and all that gets decreased. But the fear is there's all this third world poverty still sucking all the juice out of it. I don't know how to manage that. I don't pretend to be able to tell them what to do in this case.
Yeah, it does feel like a different church. I know that I grew up in a church that's very different from the one my parents grew up in, and it seems like the young generation now is also getting something very different. So it does feel like the vitality is being correlated out of the church a little bit. A lot of the creativity and a lot of the fun. I don't mean to be negative about it, but it's hard not to see it that way.
Oh yeah, a lot of what made it a community, definitely. And, you know, John, do you think that the non-English speaking world of the church is ever going to revolt? Meaning, there's so much money. I mean, look at all the money that's pushed into Deseret Book. I mean, that's all church funded, right? That's run by the church. All the books they have, if you were in some other language, especially other than say Spanish, you only get correlated material. There is no other material.
Yeah,
and all the brethren are white and from the Wasatch, from the Mormon corridor, and you know, and it's still a very Western church. As more and more of the population is south of the border in the rest of the world, do you think they're ever going to say enough already?
Right. Yeah. It's crazy.
All right. Should we go to another question?
Yeah, let's open it back up. All right, listeners, ready for a call.
All right, here's another one while we're waiting from Chris. What is the hardest aspect about lining up an interview? Is it just availability or is there a fee involved for really established people?
I've never really paid a fee.
I've never paid a fee.
Yeah, that'd be sweet.
The hardest part... What, Zilpha? is scheduling. Yeah, that's probably true.
It's really hard to schedule people.
Sometimes it's hard to find people's contact information. Sometimes they brush you off, but more often than not, it's just, you're probably the same way. There's probably about 20 out there that I'm working to one extent or the other, but they just haven't happened for this reason or that reason or the other. And you only have so much time. I mean, you could easily turn a podcast like what we do into a daily affair like Radio West.
Yeah, totally. Do you ever feel like you're running out of material, or do you feel like you've got 5 years worth?
Oh, there's an infinite supply. Do you feel like you run out of ideas?
Well, I want to keep it fresh and interesting. I don't want to go on too long. You know what I mean?
Right.
And I've been encouraged because some of my most recent ones have been some of my best. And to be honest, you guys have really helped that, because when you guys do a really good thing, it makes me want to up my game. But yeah, sometimes I feel like maybe people are getting sick of it, but.
I try to keep the podcast out of a rut. So, for example, let's say we've done a couple on issues of homosexuality. They're very interesting. They're very touching. I just want to move on to something else. So if I haven't talked to an author for a while, I'll try to get an author. If we haven't talked to, that's one thing. There's a lot of people who have very interesting stories, but I try to avoid getting into that where we're just telling people's stories. And I know that sounds kind of funny because you're the Mormon stories guy, but, it can be overwhelming to hear the same thing over and over and over again.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I struggle with that. But then sometimes I want to cover a theme. Sometimes I want to really explore something in depth. So I've kind of been on a bit of a homosexual or a gay theme. There's a couple more I have to release still. But sometimes I really like to cover stuff in blocks.
Yeah. We tend to hit a topic then move on. I think oftentimes, we probably don't do it well enough, but at least that might keep it fresh. I don't know. I don't mean that as a backhanded slight. I mean, it's sometimes hard to know how far to go and when to quit.
Sure. Totally. Yeah. Well, what else have we got on the question board? Looks like people aren't calling in. They've lost their mojo. Let's see what else we got here.
Here's one from Dan in Virginia. This addressed to me. I describe your podcast an attempt to have all sides represented, but do you think it's fairly balanced? Is Mike the best you can do for the other end of the spectrum?
I totally agree. Mike's a great guy, I'm sure, but he's almost like a straw man. Mike is like one huge straw man. You need a better defender of the faith than Mike, because it's not as credible. Does that mean? What's I mean? Did I go over the top there?
No, I mean, you can be mean to Mike because Mike's mean to everybody else.
He's mean to me, that's for sure.
Well, okay. I don't particularly try to be balanced.
You're an entertainer. You're like Glenn Beck.
Well, here's the problem with balance. It's a fallacy. And I'm not going into the whole everybody's biased thing. I'm just saying, you watch the news shows and they say, okay, we're balanced because we have a Republican and a Democrat on, as if those are the only two viewpoints out there, right? and so they do the same thing. They say, oh, you're balanced. You have an apostate and a faithful Mormon. And a lot of the questions we're dealing with are questions of history, they're questions of fact, they're questions of theology, they're questions of epistemology, all sorts of things. It's not like there is this balance that can be achieved. So I want to get at I want to cut through the vestiture, probably people who are vested in an answer, and you get a lot of ex-Mormons who are vested in it being false and a lot of Mormons vested in it being true. I want to get at the heart of the matter, because I think the questions are interesting of them in and of themselves. I don't think I particularly try to be balanced. I agree that I would like a more, I'm not saying I want to replace Mike, but I would like other faithful voices, but most faithful voices cannot operate in the world. I'm sorry. This is an insult to the Mormon world. Most Mormons just cannot operate in any sort of. They can't deal with their faith on that level. They can't deal with it academically. They can't deal with it rationally.
You should try Blake Osler. He was a great guest, and he's conservative and thoughtful. Well, intelligent.
There are a lot of faithful people who will come on the podcast. Don't get me wrong, but that sort of reoccurring, mixing it up on that. You have to admire what Mike does, because he can be sitting there in a room, we're across the country, but he can have four people slinging bullets at him, and he's unflappable. How many people like that are there out there?
kudos to Mike for sure. And it's very hard. It's very hard to find TBMs that'll come on. Hey, I got to hear. I've tried 15 times to get Daniel Peterson or Louis Midgley to come on, and they've turned me down flat. You once indicated that you almost got Dan Peterson on. What happened?
Dan said he would come on, and then he stopped returning my calls. So I don't
believe him.
I don't know. I don't know what happened there. One time, I'm just going to show up like a, you know, like a documentary crew at his office with a boom mic with a fuzzy thing on it. See if I can.
Man, you know what happened to me? This was funny. I'll just have to tell you this. So before I ever interviewed Grant Palmer, I did my best to line up somebody who could defend Joseph Smith. So I went up on the fair boards and I called and I emailed Dan Peterson and Louis Midgley and all these people. Couldn't get a fair person or a farms person for my life to come on the show that I thought would be credible or interesting. So of course, then I interviewed Grant Palmer and all the fair and farms guys say that I'm imbalanced and, you know, it was crazy. But I actually had an email exchange with Daniel Peterson where I invited him on the show, and he said, no, I'm not going to come on your show. And I'm like, whatever. And then like a year ago, I'm trying to get someone from Fair to come on the show again, and I'm being mocked for the imbalance of Mormon stories and how I don't have enough faithful listeners on. And I make this statement that, you know, well, I've tried. I've even tried Daniel Peterson a number of times, and he won't do it. He comes on the Fair board, and he's like, oh, you've never invited me to come on your podcast. Like, I'd be scared of you. You know, and then I pasted in the email conversation where he declined to come on the show, and he didn't respond in any, you know, oh, he did respond. He said, well, okay, maybe I'll come on. I've been really busy. Check back with me at the beginning of the year. And it just never materialized somehow. It's kind of funny.
Here's my thoughts on the apologist. Now, for years and years, I have been, for fun, I play on the apologist websites, the Mad Boards, the Mormon Apologetic Discussion. That's where all the big apologists gather around. I think there's really two issues going on with those guys. For years, they have been tooled up to deal with evangelical Christianity and poor evangelical Christianity at that, the sort of Ed Decker, you know, Mormons really worship the devil stuff. And that's where their writing has been. And they're also really used. Now, I love a lot of these guys. I would count virtually all of them as my friends if they would go out with me. But
right.
But
yeah.
They're used to playing on their field. And where, you know, my podcast is very secular. Yours is pretty much so. I don't think that's a field that they're comfortable operating in for the most part.
Yeah, my opinion is they want to control the conversation.
Right. And
they're not comfortable, just like the brethren aren't comfortable with any question from anybody, because I don't think they have good answers.
Yeah, it's, you know? it's the Midgley defense. They want to control both the question and the answer.
Totally.
And where they can't control that, I don't think they're comfortable. They're not going to put themselves out there.
And then what they do, and I had a conversation with someone from Fair just a couple months ago. They go back and blame it on us, and they say, oh, well, you're too negative, or oh, the threads on your blog are too negative, and they throw it back on us. But I don't see them coming out with their own podcast with interesting discussions.
Right. And you know, I also don't want to paint with too broad a brush. We've had some great apologists come on. I think you have too, you know. Kevin Barney, Consig, we've had Jeff Lindsay.
I talked to some Fair guys about that, and they said that that interview has made them not want to do any more podcasts.
Probably.
And you know why? They blamed it on the comments on your blog page.
Ah, they're pussies.
Whoa, somebody's got to beep that out.
okay, so you're an apologist. Step up. You know, you got to step out of the Maxwell Institute, and you know, I've seen a few threads all the time where they'll acknowledge when they're sober that their greatest threat that they have is from secularism, that they're just not equipped to deal with that. And that's not what they're, you know, if you were running an evangelical podcast, I think Dr. Peterson would come on in a heartbeat, but he just doesn't want to deal with the sort of issues. Cause if you come with, if you talk to me, and I'm going to throw those guys softball questions, obviously, but you know, they have to first convince me that the supernatural exists, and they're never going to be able to do that.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's a totally different playing field.
Here's another one from Dan in Virginia. Would you like to interview any well-known Mormon businessmen, Bill Marriott, Nolan Archibald? I've always wondered how people so smart and successful could be convinced of the truth of the church. Don't they have advisors? I'll take the second part first. If you accept a few premises, the church makes sense. You know, if you, there's just a few certain propositions you have to accept. And so as long as you do that, you know, it's kind of like non-Euclidean geometry or whatever it is. You know, if you forget that parallel lines can never cross, you can come up with a whole nother geometry. And that's just the way Mormonism is. If you accept certain things are true, Mormonism makes beautiful sense. And I often wonder about a lot of the apostates who can't remember that it all used to make sense back in the day. You know, there were some things we all put on our shelf or whatever, but for the most part, it made sense. So I can see how somebody like Bill Marriott or any of those other guys, you know, they're rolling in the dough. They're recognized in the business world. They're recognized in the church world. And Mormonism is a theology. I can't remember the actual term for it. There's a term out there theology that says you'll be rewarded financially and socially and successfully by obeying the gospel. And Mormon is very much like that. So hey, it's working. But as to what questions would you ask them? I don't know. I don't think they're theologians. I don't know that they would be able to express that sort of stuff. What's your thoughts, John?
Yeah, you know, I would want to interview Nolan Archibald just to ask him about his dealings with Buckley Jepson. Did you ever hear that podcast with Buckley Jepson?
Was that a long time ago?
Yeah.
You got to refresh my memory.
Basically, Buckley is this wonderful man who had served in a bishopric in his ward in D.C. And basically, he had gone inactive because he came out of the closet as gay. He and his wife amicably divorced. He stayed active, but ended up finding a boyfriend, falling in love. And he ended up getting married to this beautiful man named Michael Kessler. They got married, and then he just, you know, would quietly attend his ward alone as a married man, as a gay married man. But he wouldn't bring Michael. You know, they wouldn't hold hands or kiss or anything. But he wouldn't ask for a calling. He wasn't asking for a temple recommend. But he would try and serve in ways that he could. Like he said on his podcast that he would buy hymnals and scriptures for new converts. You know, really sweet stuff. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then his stake president was Nolan Archibald, apparently, in D.C. And his bishop was some guy. And for some reason, the bishop started coming after him and wanting to excommunicate him. It was kind of crazy. And so they come after him and it looks like he's going to be threatened with excommunication. Then he does an article with the press and lets the press know. And Peggy Fletcher Stack, I believe, or Jennifer Doudna, I forget which one, runs an article on the fact that this man's being threatened with excommunication. Guess what happens within, you know, a month or two? His bishop gets called on a mission.
Yeah, now I remember the story. Yeah, hit the press. Yeah, yeah.
Now, I've talked to some people, and they've told me that I'm crazy to believe that they would reassign a bishop in that way. And, you know, they may be right.
I've heard of that sort of stuff happening more than once. It famously happened to Ezra Taft Benson.
Right, when he went to Europe after all his John Bircher stuff, right?
Yeah, yeah. So, no, it's probably a true story.
Who's this?
This is Trevor. I'm in San Antonio, Texas.
Trevor Hunt, thanks for calling in to Mormon Expression / Mormon Stories.
Hey, Trevor.
Well, thanks for having me. My question is, you know, I My wife and I, we've been going through this cognitive dissonance, disaffection thing for the past year. And, you know, we love the church culture and we, you know, we haven't been going to church lately because it just wasn't working for us. And, we've actually tried out the Community of Christ a couple times. And, doctrinally, yeah, you know, that they seem to be pretty okay with saying that we don't know everything, and you know, we recognize that Joseph Smith was very flawed. My question is, why isn't it more why aren't there more ex-Mormons, noms, you know, people like me checking out the Prairie Mormons?
What do you mean, the Prairie Mormons?
Oh, the RLDS, the Community of Christ.
Oh, yeah. I've got a lot. John, why don't you start? But I've got a lot to say about that, too.
My thoughts are because they need to get their stuff together. I mean, for the past 20 years or so, they're just sort of, I don't know.
So John Hamer hasn't converted you yet, huh?
No. I mean, but he makes it. He almost converts me. No, and from what I understand, there's a lot of. I still don't think they know who they are. That's probably it.
You know, I've got a little bit of history here. So when I was contemplating leaving the church the first time around a couple years ago before I went inactive, I kind of went inactive for about a year. And that's when I discovered the Community of Christ. I listened to their backstory, found them to be an institution with a high degree of integrity. The fact that they discovered all this historical stuff, they owned up to it, and they decided to take a really constructive approach and lead the church in the right direction. They focused on love. They, let women come on, have the priesthood. Like, that all just really resonated with me. So I was really interested. And, I still think the people that I met at the top leadership, like Bill Russell and Susan Score, and, you know, it's an amazing organization. I want them to succeed, but, I think that it's tough because the people that I've, you know, I want to be careful about this because I want to encourage them to be successful. But I've talked to some people who have tried to attend their meetings, and I think it's been a little bit hit and miss. Maybe some people haven't felt, you know, as inspired. Maybe it's because of their own conditioning of what they're used to in the LDS church. Trevor, did you attend any of their, you said you did attend some of their sessions?
Yeah, you know, we've gone three times, and every time we've gone to the equivalent of their sacrament meeting, and we didn't do the Sunday school stuff, and it's a bit of an argument with my wife and I because she kind of still wants to go to the ward, and I want to check them out. It felt like just a very Christian meeting. I mean, actually, every time we've gone, there's been no mention of the Book of Mormon or Joseph Smith. It was just all very Christ-based teaching. The thing that was a little bummer for us is, you know, we're very much used to the Mormon experience of the big church house with lots of families our age, with kids that are the same age as our kids. And everyone there was old, you know, just a lot of older couples. There was a couple of middle-aged couples, you know, I'd say in their 40s, but the place felt a little run down, but you know, it just kind of boggles my mind because I see so much potential. There's, you know, people like me that would love to, you know, have a church that where I feel like I don't have to abandon my culture, but yet I can, you know, feel comfortable that there's not all this dogma. I just wish that, you know, like you guys said, they could get their act together.
I mean, I'll add something, Trevor, and that's that I don't think, you know, if you, and this is something John Hamer would argue with me about, and I would love to have John come back on Mormon Stories to talk about this. We've talked about it a bit, but we had planned a very long episode where John and I really talk, and somehow that fell through. But I just don't think religions succeed by claiming to be one of many good churches. I think that a church succeeds when it makes a really bold claim, when it sticks a stake in the ground and says, we're true and everyone else is false. And they give members a real reason to believe they're really onto something. If your church just says, yeah, we're good, but they're good, and you can join them or us, or take your baptism from them and bring it to us, and that's okay. I just don't think that, you know, isn't there some quote that like a religion that doesn't require everything of its members isn't worth its weight in salt? And I think there's some truth from that in that. From just a success and a growth perspective. If you look at Lutherans and Methodists and Presbyterians and Episcopalians, you know, how are they doing? They're all totally going downhill, it seems like. And the churches like Jehovah's Witness and, just, you know, who else? You know, Scientologists and others. The ones that make the exclusive bold claims are the ones who seem to be still growing. John, would you disagree with that?
No, I think that's true. The church has to require you to do something. Otherwise, I mean, what are you doing there? Now, the one that's sort of interesting that Zilf and I actually, and we've talked about this on the podcast, but Zilf and I started attending the Unitarian Church before we quit going to the Mormon Church. And I think I pretty much quit the Unitarians. I'm now inactive in two religions. So I think I quit them this year. But they're kind of strange because they almost cross the line around the other side and become bold in the fact that they proclaim they believe nothing. Or in other words, there's no dogma at all. There's nothing you have to believe, but they're just trying to grasp that community, that thing that most people don't go to church because they, you know, feel really strongly about the, you know, the Nicene Creed or anything like that. I mean, those are rare people who really get all, tangled up in that stuff. Most people go because it's their community. It's who they are. It's their identity. And so when you're changing religions, it's hard to cross that and join that new identity. You have to do it for years and years before you start feeling that they're doing it the right way. I mean, if you leave the Mormon church and go to another church, the first thing that's going to be going through your head all the time is they're doing this wrong. You know, you can't do it that way. You can't, you know, even things that you might say, man, I really wish that the women had the priesthood. I guarantee you the first time you leave a Mormon church and go to a church where there's a woman preaching, you're going to feel that something's wrong or something else like that.
You know what, though? When Susan Skor, who's an apostle to the Community of Christ, came and spoke at Sunstone, there wasn't a dry eye in the house. It was so inspirational to see a woman be an apostle. It was moving. So in that one instance, and I've heard about women, people being present when women did the laying on of hands to ordain people to the priesthood in the Community of Christ. And again, there wasn't a dry eye in the whole room. There's something beautiful about seeing women partake in the priesthood.
Oh, I agree. And, you know, after I got used to that, you know, academically, it didn't bother me. It was just something that at the bottom, he said, well, this isn't right. And especially when they would do things like, you know, they'd put stone, you know, Unitarians do a bunch of weird crap, like put stones in the river and what you know, it just never appealed to me. But I'm not a real sort of ordinance, whatever it is, this guy. So. But, John, maybe you know, so I've been casually looking for this story. After September 6th, there were a bunch of Sunstone sort of apostates and liberals who actually started a ward in Salt Lake City.
Oh.
That was to do that, to capture the culture and the elements of the religion that they liked without having the patriarchy or the dogma. And it failed. It didn't last. I think Levina was involved. I probably should just call her and ask her about it. I've been looking to find those people and bring them on because I've thought about that before. You know, I feel comfortable with Mormon things, but I don't want all the garbage that goes with it.
Yeah. I'll be honest. I've been thinking about this idea for a couple of years now. And I've talked about it a little bit too much on my podcast. You know, Judaism has Reform Judaism, and Reform Judaism at one time was heretical to the Orthodox and the Hasidic and even the conservative. Now Reform Judaism is the largest branch of Judaism in the United States. And you don't have to believe anything in Reform Judaism. Rabbis can be atheists. You don't have to believe that Moses even existed.
But they've got 4,000 years of culture. Here's the real problem. You strip away the truth claims of Mormonism, and what do you have left?
Yeah.
Mormonism.
Funeral potatoes?
Mormonism is like a half culture. If you compare it to, you know, other cultures that have been fully developed, Mormonism is sort of halfway there. They're halfway just mainstream American and halfway their own unique thing. And it's like going to other places in the United States. You know, if you go up to Maine, there's cultural elements. If you go up to Minnesota, there's cultural elements. The same thing sort of like Utah is. So I don't know if Mormon culture can survive without Mormonism, like Judaism. You know, the Jewish culture can survive without Judaism.
Yeah, and I'll just add, John, one more thing. Liberals are incredibly hard to organize and to get to pay tithing. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, they're hard. As you know, Zilf and I have spent time, you know, trying to get ex-Mormons and Mormons on the fringe together, you know, so they can meet each other and you know, have that sort of sociality. They're something coming out of Mormonism makes people very reluctant to commit.
To trust anyone.
Maybe it's trust. Maybe it's just that Mormonism takes so much commitment and so much, you know, of yourself that people just want to revolt from that. They don't want to be tied down to any sort of calling.
Right, right. All right, Trevor. Well, thanks so much for coming on.
All right. Thanks, guys.
All right. Good to talk to you.
All right, you too.
All right, John, we're going to call George, and I'm wondering if this is your George or a different George.
I don't know. We'll see.
This is George in Orange County, Yorba Linda.
Different George.
I really enjoyed this conversation about the community of Christ. I'm one of those, the LDS, you know, came in as a convert when I was 18, realized by the time I was 20 and going on a full-time mission that there were other Book of Mormon-believing churches. And so I got interested not just in the community of Christ. By the time I was on my full-time mission, I had maybe 6 or 7 newsletters coming to me from all the various branches of Book of Mormon believing churches. And so I got to know apostles in, you know, the Temple Lot Church, the Strangite Church, the Cutlerite Church, several polygamous groups. I just wonder how rare a person I am, or if other people in their Mormon experience began to start looking for a prophet that really prophesied, a revelator that really revelated, a translator that really translated, because that's where my real interest was. I started looking in these other churches when I realized that our leadership, they were just old men.
So, is there anybody you follow as a prophet today?
Well, I still have a, you know, I still have membership in the Utah Church, but I would call Monson the president of the church, not a prophet of the church. No, because I've lost my belief in Joseph Smith. Eventually, it was easy for me to see that, you know, that all of these churches were basically being led by like charismatic male leaders.
You know what's interesting is you started your statement, which is really true, talking about the Book of Mormon, and then we've kind of gone into the charismatic sort of prophet thing. And you know, if you're in Utah, about every 5 years or so, there's a significant, by significant I mean a couple hundred followers break off of the church. About every 5 years that happens.
Right.
You know, so it's something that keeps coming up over and over and over again, and they'll move off to some corner of Utah or whatever, and eventually they'll usually fall apart. But the point I want to make is the two things really are unconnected. The Book of Mormon surprisingly informs very, very little about Mormonism. You know, you can accept the Book of Mormon and pretty much believe anything you want with mainstream Christianity. So, you know, so it's interesting that those two things have gone together. And that's more from, like you hinted at, from Joseph Smith, that they trace themselves back to Joseph Smith.
Yeah, absolutely. And what happened with me was I became converted to the Book of Mormon. And of course, then along with that came the teachings of the LDS Church. And then I began to realize that, hey, these prophets aren't, they're really not prophets. You know, where are the revelations? And so I started looking in what I call Book of Mormon believing churches, thinking that maybe there was another branch of the church where the real priesthood had stayed and where there were actually prophets. And of course, I was disappointed in that. I guess the Community of Christ was the closest that I came to at one time by looking carefully at the teachings of the son of Joseph Smith, Joseph Smith III, certainly Strang published Revelations, James J. Strang. I got to know some people there, but they, of course, claim that there is no any prophet on earth today. So that's the reason that I more or less tied them together. What's interesting is that as I got these newsletters and kind of kept up on my research, you know, for decades. And one thing that I would see in the various groups is that when somebody would get mad at the leadership in their particular group, pretty soon their name would appear in one of the other small minority churches.
Right.
They would move from church to church. And I thought that was so interesting, and that they never really came back to the mainstream, you know, to the Utah body, or very few of them did. They would, if they were reorganized and they got mad at the reorganized church, they'd go across the street to Temple Lot Church. And eventually Temple Lot, you know, that, my goodness, that grew into a dozen different Elijah Message churches.
Right.
So it was interesting to me to see how leadership moves around. And even sometimes followers would. Not only would a leader, well, let's say a member of one of their 12 apostles, would get mad at the group and move across to another group, but then people who, at least his own family, and sometimes extended group, would move across with him.
Yeah, that's the problem with schisms. They just keep schisming.
Yeah,
exactly.
We've wanted to do a podcast on the history of the schisms among the Kohabs in Utah, you know, the Allreds and the Singers and all those guys. It's so complicated. I mean, Big Love is not an exaggeration. It's actually quite a simplification. It's so complicated, those schisms and rejoinings and murders and kidnappings, and it just gets crazy.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And that's how
I have a twin brother who's not LDS, and they really love, he and his family, his wife, they really love Big Love. And he would call me every week after the episode was on TV and say, okay, now tell me which group they're really, you know, which group is being brought to the forefront in this particular story. And I could actually tell him pretty much, you know, what particular polygamous group that they were bringing in to add a little, you know, flavor, color, to their story. Yeah, it's an amazing schisms. Yeah.
Well, I just want to go on record that I would love nothing more than for there to emerge a vibrant, new strain or revitalized strain of Mormonism that let liberals and progressives and disaffected engage in all the benefits of religion and church without some of the marginal costs. So, and I just want to go on the record and tell John Hamer and Susan Score and Bill Russell and all those people at the Community of Christ that I hope they are wildly successful in their ambitions. And I wish I've talked about this a little bit as well. When I was reading Carolyn Pearson's book about her husband, Gerald, being gay and then sort of being thrown into the, quote, gay lifestyle, unquote, in San Francisco in the 70s. And you see how it was just such an unhealthy environment for him at the time. But then you realize that it's not his fault. Like, if you were marginalized and ostracized, kicked out of your home, living homeless, you know, you probably wouldn't always live the healthiest lifestyle as well. I think it's just not totally cool that if you leave the LDS Church, you're ostracized, alienated, sometimes divorced, thrown out into the street without any religious or social community at all, and you have to fend for yourself. Now, I'm one who now believes that you can totally transition fine and become a happy, healthy, contributing person, maybe even more so than you ever could have as a member. But I would love to see, you know, that religion exists for a reason. I think it exists because it provides some benefit to people. I would love to see some type of Mormon-themed church or religion emerge that gave many of the disaffected people I work with a spiritual and a community home without a lot of the baggage. And I just want to applaud Community of Christ for trying to make that happen. And I want to encourage all my listeners to start their own massive alternative Mormon church.
But what,
I nominate, I nominate John Larson to be the first prophet.
What would be left?
Zilpha. I nominate Zilpha to be the first prophet.
That's a much better choice. She's been talking about starting her own church, actually. So
will you talk to her? Tell her I nominate her.
So if you strip away all the weird stuff, don't you strip away everything from the Restoration? I mean, what makes it? What would be left that's Mormon? You know?
No, I don't know how to do it, man. I don't know how to do it. And
well, there's
it
still the culture there, though. I still am a cultural Mormon, and even though I've stripped away all of the beliefs, you know, other than I've kept a hope in my faith in the grace of Jesus Christ. You know, I've kind of stayed with that message.
But I mean, there's 100 churches out there for you, then, aren't there?
Oh yeah, and the Restoration though really has gone away. Except that I love the culture. I love getting together with other liberal Mormons. One thing in California, we do have some wards out here. Occasionally you fall into a ward where you've got, you know, a lot of people, a lot of members, families, especially some of the singles wards. You've got a lot of people who are very, very liberal in the way that they interpret Mormonism. And I love it. And I have several children of my own, and I see, I guess I would call them TBMs. They're pretty, you know, three of them are at the temple tonight, for a granddaughter who's getting married. But the truth is that they think in a very, very liberal way about the church. They embrace the good things, you know, and just try to have something interesting to read. On those occasional talks that come up in church that nobody wants to listen to.
Right.
All right. Well, we'll do it.
George, thanks for calling in, man.
Hey, good talking to you, man.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Keep it up. This is an interesting concept. I love this.
Thanks, guys. Thanks, George.
Sure. Bye-bye.
Please join us as the discussion continues in part 2.